the flower, and you can ask him where it is and where it comes from. And then all of these men that we are having here are from the financial and fiscal. Next time when we meet with them, they'll say they sort out their gender balance. that's who all of them are. And that's reflective really of and the ANC and the DABA. That's reflective of what we're going to be discussing today. We're going to be dealing with what? This will be the last quarterly financial report from yourself for the year in HR2. The next time when we talk to you, you will present to us your annual report, where we will bring together all the things that you have said to us during the year. So this is the last one. The next one is the annual report. I think you have forgotten it's annual report time. And the finances thereof. Also, we might as well say that your report are supposed to be by Parliament at the end of September, as per the rules of Parliament, and we will then deal with it when we come back from our constituency period. On the financial and fiscal committee being here, we have been referred to by Parliament to place this on our agenda. And again, the financial and fiscal report, albeit that it's not covering water, affairs and forestry on its own, but a range of very many different departments, we are obviously interested in so far as the water and forestry is concerned and the particular recommendations that they are making within their report, and the decision thereof that we need to reflect. The committee must then take into consideration what they say, and we are supposed to report back to Parliament on our own recommendations arising out of the FSC presentation and report. Those are the two main areas that we're going to be dealing with. There are two other matters, three other matters, honourable members, four other matters. The first one is the minutes we would like to be adopted. There are two sets of minutes which we require a quorum for. The second one is we want to suggest that we refer the report on Northwest. We will ask Parliament to allow us to meet when we come back from Bizana to deal with that. And then in the meantime, honourable members, because we did not receive one sentence of recommendation from yourself on the Northwest report, that's the other reason we're asking to hold it back. And then deal with it, not next week, then we'll deal with it next week on a special meeting. Secretary, do we have a quorum now? Because I can't talk any further anymore. We do have a quorum now. I need to leave the meeting, because the speaker has called a meeting with a special meeting with all the chairpersons this morning. I'm going to leave you halfway, and I want to ask if we can't get an acting chairperson in the meantime to take over when I leave, and if I can ask you to do that now. Comrade Kay. Seconder and a mover for Comrade Aronson to take the chair. Is there any violent opposition to that? Is there anyone else that would like to object? There being no objections, honourable Aronson, as soon as I leave, so welcome to the chair, and we'll see the meeting to its final conclusion. That's the first one. The second one is, whilst there's a quorum, honourable members, the minutes of, which date? Australia.
22nd of August.
There are many of them. That shaking of your head, Honorable Mosala. Okay. You sound like you're very happy with the minute, as always. Thank you very much. Is there anyone that doesn't like the minutes of the 22nd? Not so. Is there anyone that doesn't like the minutes of the 24th? Unanimous. Anyone for 29? We're all smiling on the minutes of the 29th. Anyone on the minutes of the 5th of September 2007? That's it. The minutes are done. All of them. Thank you very much. Your names are all spelled right, I can see. The next issue that requires a quorum, I don't think there's anything else. And lastly and very quickly, as you know, next week the People's Assembly of Parliament is taking the people to the Parliament next week in Bizana in the Eastern Cape, where we will have the unveiling of the O.R. Tambo and all the other activities. Can I ask the members, these are the following things that we're supposed to do. By lunchtime today, all of you must give to Razia. In fact, you're supposed to fill in that form, because Parliament, as you know, are supposed to make this arrangement for this coming Sunday. Everything else that is required, can you please make sure that you give it to Razia. Lastly, on the Bizana, our program will be the following. On the Tuesday, I think I'm going to repeat myself, on the Tuesday, no, not the Tuesday, on the Monday, in the morning we will go to the ceremony, and in the afternoon we will have a joint session with environmental affairs, with provincial and local government. There are four committees: water affairs, provincial and local government, environmental, and transport. We will have a joint session with them, and we will look at our Tambo's IDP, and we will look at their provincial and growth development plan, and that will take class. That's Afrikaans. My Afrikaans. That will happen the afternoon. The next day, honorable members, there's a program where we will deal with some of the water and forestry challenges, and also with the water board and DWAF, of course, the afternoon. We have been given a choice to either stay in the tent or whatever, or to participate in outside activities. I trust that the Jefferson has represented you well by saying you're not going to sit in the tent all the time. You would want to go out and look at all the water issues. And so that's what we're going to do. The Wednesday, there's no choice. We will all come together and sit and have the final People's Assembly issue. Is that okay, Honorable Mayor?
Good.
Honorable Martin?
Thank you, Chairperson. Actually, I discovered that on the meeting of the members raised the following. These are the things that we raised on the 5th, and on the number 14, actually, was supposed to be the conclusion and the right position, if we're done. Yeah, the wrong feeling.
Absolutely will be corrected. Thank you very much. Okay. We'll do the following. We'll start with the financial and fiscal, and then we'll get to Dwa, because Dwa will have the opportunity to at least respond to you also, and the members. Can I ask yourself to tell us who the delegation is, and then we can take it from there.
Good morning, Chair, and honorable members of the committee. My name is J.R. Josie. I'm the Deputy Chairperson of the Financial and Fiscal Commission. Also, good morning to members of the block. I'd like to just introduce the rest of the delegation here. The other members of the commission were not able to come. The chairperson is on annual leave. And so I'm representing the commission. On my left here is Mr. Bongani Kumalo. He's a program manager for fiscal policy. He's responsible for many of our recommendations to research that relates to fiscal policy issues. On my right here is Mr. Denver Keller. He's also a senior researcher on the macroeconomic and public finance areas. Next to Mr. Kumalo is Mr. Conrad Panka, who is a program manager for budget analysis and does the areas of work on performance of provincial budgets and local government budgets. Next to him is Mr. Henry Eckstein, who is the parliamentary liaison officer and manages the office in Cape Town. I'm also based in Cape Town. My main function is to ensure that we have effective reporting to Parliament. We want to apologize. We were not able to bring some of our, to get a proper gender balance. We do have some senior program managers, but because of the cost of flying people down from Gauteng, we had to limit it to the people that we have here. But we try to remedy that for the future. The gist of our submission is contained in what we present annually. It's called the Submission for the Division of Revenue. And in this submission, in terms of the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act, the Commission is supposed to make recommendations for the forthcoming budget. And these recommendations are for the budget 2008-2009. This year we've covered quite extensively various issues, but we're not going to cover the whole recommendation. What we will cover is the areas that you requested that we should cover. The areas that you requested include, among others, the performance of provincial budgets and provincial government spending, which Mr. Sandra Pankas will cover. But I think the more important area that you were looking for was also the Commission's view on the shifting of functions and what the implications of the shifting of functions from one sphere of government to another sphere of government implies. We will cover that in some detail. We will also cover some of the other area that you required, which was how we look at allocations of the vertical division to the different spheres of government with respect to some models that we've been preparing. So maybe I will ask Mr. Van Kaap to very quickly go through the section. Conrad, we want to the benefit of the chairperson, so we must try and cover it as quickly as possible. Don't go into too much of the detail.
All right.
Thank you, Chair.
The section on the performance of provincial budgets and expenditure is applied specifically in this submission to provincial government, although in many ways the methodology could be applied to municipalities as well and to municipal water departments. The way that we measure fiscal performance capacity was in respect of the evaluation criteria, which are listed in Section 2142 of the Constitution. Those are the criteria that the is required to use to do its evaluations. And the ones that we picked up on were the national interest, and I'll explain what we meant by the national interest in respect of the policies of ASUSA and TIPSA. We focused on infrastructure spending and spending on skills training and see how the forms in respect to provincial government, that methodology could be applied across to local government as well. Then the developmental needs of provincial government, that's in respect to things like efficiency and the economy of spending, and then at stable and predictable revenue shares, which is a specific criterion. The analysis, I'm just giving the findings of the analysis, but the analysis covered the previous three financial years, that was 2003 to 2005, the then current financial year, 2006, and then the forthcoming medium term expenditure framework period 2007-2009. So the first recommendation is, and what we've noted in respect of some of the smaller programs or some of the newly established programs, but particularly in respect of infrastructure spending and skills training, there's often the cycle of policy prioritization and then over-budgeting, or over-budgeting in the sense that it cannot all be spent, so that the following year there's then underspending, followed by cutbacks in the budget. And so what you see is the growth part of budgets that's very unstable, it fluctuates over time. And what we're arguing is that this is not, in respect of trying to plan infrastructure projects, quite difficult for the project manager to do. They need a much more stable and predictable flow of funds. And so the recommendation is here that in order to ensure stable and predictable allocations between the different programs and categories of spending, national, provincial, or municipal treasuries should aim for a stable budget growth path over a 7-year period. And we've got data over the past 3 years, we've got the current year, and we've got the future 3 years. And we can ensure that budgets are kept on a stable growth path rather than a really fluctuating one. In respect of the second recommendation, it's that programs that have been prioritized by policy, and here we can either have a look at the CISA JIPSA or the policy papers of the department, or the State of the Nation and the budget speeches for our guidance in that respect. But those policies and those programs that have been prioritized should be supported by a higher than average annual growth rate, meaning that those programs that have not been specifically identified would have a lower than average growth rate. And this is to ensure policy alignment. What we've noted is that for certain, with respect to infrastructure and skills training, provincial governments have in fact prioritized, and that is according to policy. But in certain programs like further education and training, adult basic education and training, and the conditional grants to health professional funds training, those are exceptions. The third recommendation relates to the entrenchment of best practice, particularly as it relates to infrastructure planning and budgeting. And that is that one should separate out the planning and the procurement in certain financial years, and then the actual implementation in another financial year. And particularly when we have situations where public works is doing projects for other departments. Where the funding goes through in the middle of the year, then there's over-adjustment, there's fiscal dumping, that money can't get spent. So we're arguing, and the National Treasury is following this up with this IDIP program with provincial departments, where they proper alignment of the financial year with the planning year and the implementation is constructed. Not yet done across all provinces and all provincial departments, and not yet at the municipal level. The fourth recommendation is relating to the measurement of non-financial indicators, and of, in particular, it is what the departments are meant to be delivering. And what we're recommending here is that every departmental service delivery program, be it at provincial or municipal level, should be defined by and reported in the provincial budget and expenditure review, or the local government budget and expenditure review, the actual number of beneficiaries for each program, as well as the targeted number, and in that way, if we compare the two, we can measure progressive realization in accordance with the constitution. Then the numbers of staff and their budgets by occupational skills learning. Very frequently in the budget speech or in the State of the Nation address, particular professions are targeted for more money to be spent. But unless our budgets are broken down in a particular way, it's difficult to be able to say whether in fact there is an alignment of policy or not. Then the current items are capital assets. Well, the capital assets, it could be for water affairs, it could be dams and pipes and bulk installation. Current items would be other things related to the future maintenance. So these should be reported on. And in this way, we can see what the cost per unit, the cost per kilometer of pipeline, for example, is. We're also saying here that provincial departments should report on these non-financial indicators on behalf of their service delivery agents. So where is there a case for departments given to non-government organizations or to contractors or public entities to deliver, they should report on that. Those delivery agents should also report on that. Otherwise, we get a sense that money is being spent where they know that might not have been. Finally, the fifth recommendation relates to a measure for determining socio-economic impact. We're arguing that every four items of government capital spending and current spending be evaluated in respect of their impact on economic growth, on poverty reduction, employment, and on reducing the income inequality.
Thank you, Conrad. Chair, I will go immediately into the second point, which I think would be very of much interest to your committee, which is what's the SSC's view on the shifting of functions, because I believe you are, and the Minister of Water Affairs and your committee are quite keen to know what the processes are that are involved in shifting of functions, especially when it comes to services such as water, electricity, and other functions that are in house and others. The SSC didn't make this as a recommendation, but we developed this as a tool to guide ourselves. In terms of legislation, the SSC is required to make recommendations when there's a shifting of functions from one area to another area. Just to remind the committee that the Commission makes its recommendations using two essential sections of the Constitution, that is Chapter 2, which relates to the Bill of Rights, and then Chapter 13, which relates to the issues around finance. And there are criteria in those sections, especially in Chapter 13, that SSC uses in making its recommendations and in making assessments of how things work. The SSC Act requires that the Commission must assess and make recommendations on any shifting of functions. Now, we know there has been some continuous shifting of functions between government departments and between spheres of government. Now, the big problem with shifting of functions, it may lead to unfunded mandates, or it may lead to underfunded mandates. And that's a problem, and then the SSC needs to then make comments. What we've done in this recommendation is we've developed a framework of how these functions should take place, what criteria should be used around that. The main principles of that guide the framework for assessing function shift are that the function shift refers to a function that was previously assigned by the Constitution or any law made by the Parliament or provincial legislator to an organ of state. Now, when we say organ of state, we're talking of all national departments or national provincial departments and organs that have legislative functions with respect to different the schedules 2 and 3 and 4 of the PFMA and the constitutional institution. There are certain principles which are important to guide us when we make recommendations on function shifts, and of course the main principle here is cooperative governance, which is in Chapter 3 of the Constitution. In other words, the decision to assign or delegate a function should be appropriate for the whole country. We can't make a decision to shift a function from one sphere to another sphere if it doesn't have the national interest, if it doesn't take the national interest into consideration. The delegation, delegating sphere or organ of state must accept that the funding requirements or support necessary must also be considered, taken into account. You can't give a function over or delegate a function without looking at what the financial implications are going to be. Assigning and delegating department sphere organs should be also constantly monitored, because some of the functions that you've delegated or shifted, if they are not constantly monitored, it may have a negative effect. And then, of course, there must be some contractual agreement between the parties. Another key principle that the Commission refers to is what's called enhancing subsidiarity. Subsidiarity is the principle where the function must be delivered at the, by the sphere of government closest to the people. In other words, if there is the sphere of government that is closest to people, then they must be held responsible for basically ensuring that a function is fulfilled. The function assigned to a municipality must be the one that would be most effectively administered locally. And the municipality, for example, has the capacity, must have the capacity to administer this function. The other principle is the transfer of the authority role. The authority for the function must be transferred in full. You cannot transfer half a function. You cannot, if you transfer a function, the full authority must be given to that sphere of government. As much as possible, functions must not be split. You can't have dual, it's like performance contract. You can't have two people managing one performance contract. It must be given in full, and there must be no splitting. And there must be a clear distinction between the function of a local municipality or between a government department and a public entity. And I think this is very specific when it comes to water affairs and agencies delivering water. Unless there's some reason where it is unavoidable, clear, and in that case, then clear lines of responsibility should be drawn to ensure that those, if it's unavoidable that you're going to have split authority, then there must be clear lines of responsibility. The other principle is efficient and effective and sustainable delivery of services. You cannot allocate a function if you're not sure that there's going to be efficiency and effective delivery. Equitable, efficient, affordable, economical, and other principles should be considered when we evaluate a shift of a function. Now, some definitions that we use in our model for shifting functions, and I think if people are interested, we on the FFG website, the manual is there, and we also developed a checklist. In other words, Safe Water Affairs or the Department of Water Affairs wants to establish and undertake or propose a function shift. There is a checklist in the FSC website with a manual attached of how you can do a checklist against what needs to be taken into account when certain functions need to be shifted. We normally use that for ourselves, but I think it's quite feasible for any department or government or even parliamentary committee to use a checklist. The definition of terms here is the authority of for execution of functions. You have what is called a primary assignment, which is determined by the constitutional mandate. The primary assignment is always determined by legislation and the constitutional mandate. Then you have the term called delegation. When we talk of delegation, we say the temporary transfer of power. It's a temporary transfer of power functioned by a province or national legislature to another organ of state in accordance with Chapter 2, 3, 8A and D or B of the Constitution. So that's what delegation means. Assignment is general assignment, is one that is either transferred by the national sphere to all provinces or all provinces to municipalities. That's when something is assigned. Asymmetric general assignment results when only certain provinces and municipalities receive an assignment. So when you don't receive the full assignment, then we call that asymmetric general assignment. Then we have what's called specific assignment. This is the transfer of a statutory power in provincial and national legislature to a specific municipality according to Section 99 and 126 or 154 of the Constitution. Here I mentioned that we have the checklist and the manual, which is on the SSC website, and people can make reference to that, and I think it would be very useful if people use that as a reference, because I know the Department of Local Affairs and Provincial and Local Affairs are seriously looking at that area when they are doing this questionnaire that has been circulated if we want to consider function shift. And the FFC notes then towards the end that a proper preparation for a shift, you know, if you do a proper preparation, if you do your checklist well, at the end of the day, you may discover that it may not be necessary to shift the function, that shifting a function may not be the best solution. And if you come to that conclusion, then of course there are lots of savings you could save, and the positive results would mean you could save both resources and time in the process. So this is how the Commission in future will be able to undertake these function shifts, and we hope that you know, if you need any advice or you want to have some recommendations from us with respect to specific functions on water to the different spheres or water and policy issues, then the Commission will be quite happy. When we finish the second presentation, I'll ask Mr. Kumalo to raise some issues which may have specific reference to water affairs, and to give you an open where you may be able to use the SFT's resources for making recommendations. So that's the issue of functionship. One of the other areas the SFT looked at is the model for the division of revenue and how we intend to develop the division of revenue. I'll ask Mr. Callas to very quickly go through that. We won't take you through the technicalities, they are all in the submission document, but it gives you good insight as to how the FFG wants to propose the review of the provincial equitable sharing formulas so that equitable sharing can be done more objectively.
Thank you, Chair. In a nutshell, the TNPS model is a simulation model that allows for the progressive realization of basic services which are included in the model. These basic services are assigned to provinces and local governments to provide them, and the model also allows for or accounts for the macro constraints or the limited resources or the pool of funds available to be distributed in the provision of basic services. The model aims to solve three policy issues, and this was identified back in 2002. And these are how to balance the need to provide CMDS with macroeconomic constraints that limit the available resources. Secondly, how to objectively determine the equitable sharing of available revenue among the three spheres of government. And thirdly, what resources need to be allocated to capital spending in a way that is consistent with the first two questions. Since 2002, the FFG has been working in collaboration with technical experts from Curtin University in Australia, and we created this overarching economic model that addresses all of these issues in a coherent fashion. This slide shows the TMB modeling sub-project flowchart. It is essentially a simplified picture of the components of the TMB model and how they fit together and how the model works. If you look at box 1A, that tells us the data tip or the processes which the model follows in determining the expenditures for the various services, and I will go through those 5 tips shortly. Box 2 looks at poverty, inequality, disability factors impacting the cost of CMD provision. The CMD model takes account of poverty, inequality, disability. For example, population dispersion in regions or areas where there is a high degree of population dispersion. It costs more to provide essential services to those part areas. Another disability factor group, which the model includes, is health, such as TB, other debilitating diseases such as AIDS. Areas or regions which have a high degree of these diseases require more resources to manage, for example, healthcare requires more funding for hospitals, etc. Also, socio-economic indicators such as the degree of inequality, income inequality, and poverty in the various regions. Box 3 looks at the database. The model relies on a substantial database, which is collected and put together separate from the cost function box, which is captured in box 1. The various data include data to calculate disabilities in the various regions, service output expenditures, are put in good practice, giving you a full data, the amount of money available for division amongst the provinces and local governments to provide basic services. Box 4 is a simulation model which draws on the Box 2 and Box 3 to produce simulation, and that feeds from and feeds into the other boxes, such as Box 5, which looks at macroeconomic implications. That just says that the model can feed into or feed from, for example, the effective social accounting matrix, which imposes certain macro restrictions on the available pool of funds to be distributed. Now, if you look again at Box 1, I'll quickly go through the process which the model follows in dividing the total national available pool of funds equitably amongst the province and local governments in the provision of basic services. The first step or process which the model follows is to estimate a level of output or a desired output, and this is decided by the policymaker at some future point in time, for example 2010. So if the current period is 2007, the policymaker will decide in 2010 that is the amount of output that he wants to achieve. What the model then does is to adjust that desired level of output for poverty, inequality, disability factors. So the model accounts for poverty, inequality differences among the various provinces and local governments and factors that link to the desired output. So those provinces which have a higher degree of disability will require more funding, and the model then allows for more funding to flow to that area or region in the provision of service. The next step or process the model follows is to estimate a cost function for each service, and the cost function is the heart of the CNTS model. And essentially, a cost function is, it tells us the minimum cost that is needed to produce a given level of output. So here the model will tell us the minimum amount of money necessary to achieve the desired level of output in 2010. And this cost function is estimated in the current period, for example 2007, and it will tell us the minimum resources or money needed to achieve our desired level of output as set by the policymaker to be achieved in 2010. The next process is where the model estimates the training efficiency. The training efficiency is just the difference between what is currently being spent on service provision and what is needed to be spent to achieve the desired output in 2010. The model then, in the fourth step, allocates grants for capital expenditure and recurrent expenditure for each of the services. It does this through a dynamic process, so that in each period between 2007 to 2010, the policymaker is able to, given the available pool of funds, allocate resources to the services with the aim of achieving the desired level of output in 2010. So in each year, for example 2008, the model will allocate an amount of funding necessary to achieve the desired output in 2010. So it will be the current or what is currently being spent plus a portion of the spending efficiency in each period until we reach the desired level of output in 2010. Okay, the final step or process is the determination of the provincial equitable allocation and local equitable allocation. Here, this is simply done by summing across provinces or across regions and across services for the provincial sphere, he tells us what the provincial equitable allocation should be, and likewise for the local equitable allocation. I mean, the changes across the local government and the services that are provided by the local government. I'll just finish the slide. So, to conclude, the main guiding to policy analysts, depending on how the model is used, is to provide estimates of what the level of service provision could be achieved under different assumptions made by the policymaker by the size of the allocations available. And secondly, the model provides estimates of the size of allocations required to achieve a particular target level of service provision specified by the policymaker over a specified period. And the FFC will use this model as a tool in making recommendations in the critical division of national collective revenue.
Thank you, Denza. Chair, just to give the committee some information, we are launching this model at the School of Government, University of Western Cape, with the presence of the speaker and the chair of the National Council of Provinces on the 23rd and 24th of October. And after the launch of this model, the development of the model was supported by the Australian government and it's in collaboration with the Minister of Finance of South Africa and the Australian government. And we will be then having a workshop and training some people from the different provincial and national government departments on how they can apply this in developing so on. So we did send an invitation to the speaker and the chairman of the National Council of Provinces and some committees, and inviting them to nominate people who want to attend the launch, and maybe some will have the capacity to understand the technicalities and want to learn from Parliament. So I think, you know, if you're interested in it's 23rd and 24th of October at the University of Western Cape. Chair, I will just give Mr. Kumalo 7 minutes to just make some comments on what may be of relevance to Water Affairs and how you can use this committee for making recommendations. We also make recommendations which have a national implication because issues, this is why we developed this particular model, because if we say water services is a constitutionally mandated service, then we need to see what the cost of providing water would be and how that would impact on the vertical division of revenue. Thanks. One?
If you can be less than 7 minutes.
Yeah, actually I'm not going to be even 2 minutes. What I actually wanted to say was to quickly respond to one of the questions that was listed in the request that we got from your committee chair, basically related to the progress around the transfer of water services to municipalities. What we have not actually worked on that issue since I think 2002, if I'm not mistaken. That's the last time that we interfaced with that, because we basically have not had any reason to suspect that there's anything that was going wrong. I basically tried to get in touch with the key role players in the process of trying to answer or to respond to the question. What we picked up was that the progress that is actually happening with respect to that is actually, from my perspective, is actually quite satisfactory. We haven't received any substantial questions from municipalities or from, let me say, from the affected municipalities or from SAUDA or from the Department of Water Affairs in terms of the resources that are actually available in terms of supporting the shifting of that function. Now, I looked at the checklist that Mr. Josie is referring to with respect to this particular shifting of this function. And I suspect that in terms of financial resources, there hasn't been a big problem there. And also in terms of the staff, there have been staff transferred to support the shifting of that function, and there's also staff that's seconded from the National Department to support the function. There's about 91% of the agreement have already been signed, and I think the final deadline for the full shifting of that function is 2011, and already you're looking at 91% of agreement having been signed. So we basically would, if you are interested, then try to look at what is actually happening in the municipality with respect to the budget allocation. The municipality that receives that and the spending there, then we can come back with a fuller response to that piece. Otherwise, I don't think there are any big issues to worry about from our perspective.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much to the team, honourable members. I know it's lots of technicalities and so on that they have informed us about, and I'm happy they've done that before Dwight also speaks, because whilst this has been referred to our committee, I think for the members, more and more our financial obligations as portfolio committees are being asked to be reflected in this parliament, and so we were asked to comment on what they have done and will continue to do, and in our instance, of course, we are very interested to track both the services side and well, in particular water in this instance, and obviously also the headache around infrastructure, and we were hoping, I mean, today in Parliament we will be doing a mini adjustment budget, I call it, a mini adjustment budget. And it would have been nice if they had included in their water for the targets that have been set also, because as we did oversight, almost all of the municipalities told us that they had challenges with regards to meeting those targets. So I think that's what we are interested in as a committee, because this committee does have to oversee functions both at the national level, very much provincial, and very, very, very much at a local level, because of the service-orientated nature of what needs to be achieved by, 2015, if you like, you know, in order to achieve halving poverty in this instance. So I think on that note, I want to thank you very much for coming, and maybe just allow the members to reflect on some questions to yourself. But in addition to that, say that it does give this committee the opportunity to also plan towards our annual report that we need to look at, but also towards the strategic plan next year, and also how do we on a quarterly basis, because we bring the department on a quarterly basis here, what are the additional things that we need to look at as a committee when we deal with these things on a quarterly basis, and how do we, because we have not been able to master as a committee, how do we follow the finances as it goes to the very local level. We've been tracking the services, but not necessarily the expenditure thereof. So I think I want to thank you very much. Are there some questions from members? Arantur, Dwati, and then Comrade Kay.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, the presentations, of course, are very welcome. I must say that I haven't been in any meeting over the years that I've been in Parliament for the fiscal, the Financial and Fiscal Commission. It's really the first time for me. So you must pardon me, my questions will probably be out of ignorance. You know. I just wanted to know, Chairperson, could have misunderstood many things that they said, since I have never seen any meeting with them. How do you, apart from the manual and checklist, how do you monitor any department, you know, to
come to the conclusion that you need to actually make certain recommendations. How do you get to that? When a particular department, a function shifts, is it referred to you? I'm ignorant of your parameters within which you operate. So that's why I'm asking the question. For instance, this department, well, has shifted, the function has shifted a bit in that they're no longer implementing agents. They're more regulatory agents. So, did you make specific recommendations in relation to this department? For instance, how would you assess a department that has that is a national department with its national assets, but also has offices in each of the regions, each of the provinces. They call them regional offices. How would you go about, making recommendations in relation to the kind of shift that has happened in relation to the Department of Water, Waste and Forestry? And then just lastly, Chairperson, there is going to be this workshop at the University of Western Cape. Do you foresee this model is a flexible model? Do you foresee that there's going to have to be any changes after the workshop to the model? Or do you believe that it's a model that can be implemented as is in South Africa? Since I am suspecting that maybe the model would be something that would be much easier to implement in Australia, still being a first world country, than possibly in Africa. If you maybe can just enlighten me on that. Thanks, Jesus.
Thank you very much, Jefferson. Honorable Karanth has already pointed some of the things that I wanted to ask, but anyway, I just wanted to find out, because here they are speaking of shifting of the function. I will just give an example with the functions that the water forestry was doing, but they just taken away some of the functions from the department to the district municipality. So I just wanted to find out from you as to whether are you going to check how when you allocate funds that the district municipality are getting a bigger share. Or are you going also to check as to whether are you going to categorize this municipality, because it's got different municipalities, it's got metros and it's got district municipalities. So what criteria are you going to use to fund those municipalities so that you can be able to know that these are rural and these are metro? How are you going to do that? And another thing is with regard to capacity. When you're talking of the shifting of the functions, we also should check the capacity of the weather. Are those people who are going to be given that function capable, actually, to deliver the service or render activities on those local members? And how are you in terms of allocating those funds so that you can cover all those that you need for them? Thank you very much.
In regard to the stable budget. Now, the question of entrenchment of best practice, I think, is very important. Now, to what extent could we present the assembly that in government that we are making great strides in the question of entrenchment of best practice? The other is on the question of understanding called by special adjustment. How does this arise? Understanding is bad enough. And these are excessive adjustments one would like to carry. And finally, on the question of cooperative governance, to what extent, or you could say, how effective are these, and also what strides are we making in reaching a higher standard of cooperative government. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We will, I think this will be the last on this issue, then we will close it and give it to Dwarf. Honorable Sabian, this is your end, lastly, and then.
How this topic could come about, the modeling and the shifting of functions. The province is now coming to the picture because the department was working directly with the municipality. When we visit the province, or municipality, discover mostly that the assets so far have not yet been transferred to municipality. And certain boreholes are dysfunctional and they cannot be transferred and accepted by the municipality as dead holes. I wonder if this model is a result of meetings with the department, with the provincial legislature and the municipality, and then that they did actually come into agreement that this should be operational. Because we might be engaging ourselves in an exercise which does not affect service delivery to the people who actually get it. We are talking about it being a brainchild born out from Australia. So far, none of us perhaps have seen how that model affects the people of Australia, especially has it been tried and tested to see to it that it will bear fruits, that fruit is actually service delivery on the people, especially the rural people?
Alright, let's take some answers, but I'm sure you've been misunderstood completely on this Australian thing. Quite frankly, our constitution, you have quoted our constitution quite significantly, and I think the members must read section, chapter 2, they must read chapter 13, because really I think you are responding. Parliament has not been able to rise to the occasion, to our obligation in the constitution, when it comes to what the portfolio committees are supposed to do in relation to those sections, and then also why DWAF are not dealing with the services. It's a constitutional matter that the constitution has asked that services go down to municipalities. So I think that's why we have asked you to come here, because we're following the constitution and we want to bring your presentation to its logical conclusion in relation to what is Parliament's obligation now that these things are there? These are the realities of what the Constitution says. So I think the Australian thing, maybe we should not bother with it so much. We just bother with what does our Constitution say, what does the laws and the acts say in the Parliament. I lastly, as I'm about to, we just want to ask you whether indeed you can tweak the simulation in a way that lends itself to, we are a developing country, the flexibility, and tweak it in such a way that the outcomes of the simulation, not what we desire, but take into consideration where we are at and what, and whether the simulation model in itself is on the system that one can look at the moment, because one wants to see what are the ingredients we have put into the simulation model to have the outcomes in whatever way, because whatever you put into simulation, the outcome is going to be whatever you put in there. But can I thank you as I leave and ask Honorable Aaron to leave, and Dwarf, you are in 2 minutes. You are on. I can see you becoming a bit good to see there.
Thank you, Chair. Before you leave, I'd like to thank you for saving me. I think you are right. Look, the Australian government only gave us money to do it. The model is ours.
It's not going to do it in Australia.
That's all. In fact, we've developed it here in-house with people, myself. I conceptualized the model and I developed it using our constitution. It has nothing to do with Australia or anyone else, for that matter. So I think it was a recommendation that was given to us in 2002, a request by Treasury and by the national government and by the presidency. And we've been working for the past 5 years to develop it, and we did get help, some technical help, but it's a very indigenous, it's a very local basis for what we are doing.
It's on the ground.
Yes, it's South African, it's fully South African. And I think the important point here is that, you know, already countries from India and Brazil and others are coming to us. In fact, I've been invited to go to India in November to do a presentation, because other countries are quite keen to learn from how we are developing these issues here in South Africa. What has helped us greatly, Chair, is that our constitution, as the Chair said, makes it possible for us to develop such a model. Because on the one hand, the constitution says you've got to give these services. But in chapter 13, the constitution also says there are limits that you've got to, financial limits. So we've developed this model that tries to balance these two sides. That's why we call it the CMBS model, which is uniquely South African. It's a constitutionally mandated basic service. The constitution mandates these services. So we are saying if the constitution mandates these services, like the Kroodbom case said, you know, then government does not have limitless amounts of money. So given the amount that you've collected, given the amount that the taxes are brought into the country, are collected in the country, how can we allocate? And we can tweak it. We tweak it according to the pool that we have. We don't tweak it in terms, the first model we did, we were saying, well, let's cost everything and then say that's what we need. Now we are saying, no, let's look at the pool first. What, how much have we collected in taxes? And then cost it and find the minimum cost is going to achieve a particular outcome for that model. So that's what this model does, and that's what we are hoping. But the most important thing here is it's an FSC model. It's to help us. If government wants to use it, they're quite welcome to, but it's a tool for us to be making informed recommendations. So I think, you know, for us that's important. And then the issue here about the function shift, we make these recommendations because the FSC Act says to us that if there's any shifting of function, then that decision to shift the function must come to the Commission. In other words, no government department, no provincial legislature can determine a function without it coming to the Commission. So the Act, the legislation actually requires that Parliament, government departments, if they want to shift, for example, if the Ministry of Water Affairs or the Department wants to shift their function and it has serious financial implications, then in terms of the Act, they are obliged to come to us, to say to us, what can you give us a recommendation? Like this, I'll give you an example. There's this new bill that's been, Municipal Finance Management bill that's just been drafted. It's waiting for the presidential signature. Now, that bill had to come to the Commission. You know, Minister of Fiscal Powers and Functions Bill. Now, we had to comment on this bill before the President can sign it. That's in terms of legislation. That's what our Parliament requires. Same with shifting of functions. There was once when the DPLG undertook to shift the function. I'll give you the classic example on the issue of the demarcation of boundaries a year ago. Because it did not come to the Commission first, it went to court. So people raised the issue that, you know, this is not legal because the Commission had not commented on it, because the law requires that we comment on it. So I think, Chair, that's what gives us that mandate. Now, we can, if we are alert, we try to be alert, and we can remind minister or government, say, hey, you can't go and pass this thing because we first got to look at it. And that can save a lot of embarrassment. But it's also the role of Parliament. It's your role, for example, as a committee, if you feel that there's certain shifting of function, that are taking place and the Commission has not looked at this. You can call on the Department or the Minister to say, has the SSC looked at this? Can you send it to get their recommendation? And then you can call us to inform you, because we report to you. You are, the Parliament is our reporting channel. The SSC does, we report to Parliament. We are accountable to Parliament. So you can call on us to say, this is what Dwarf wants us to do. This is what the Forestry Department wants us to do. Can you give us a recommendation? Like the Minister, the Select Committee and the Portfolio Committee on Finance, they asked us to comment, to make recommendations. So we make the recommendations depending on what you want from us and what government. So we are here to serve the parliamentary committees in that respect. So that's to answer your question. With the criteria to fund municipalities, again, as we say in the checklist, if you have time, you can go to the website and you'll see, we say that, you know, there is a list of criteria. You cannot shift the function. You have to ensure that all these criteria are met, and capacity, personnel, shifting of assets, etc. All those things have to be weighed up very effectively and undertaken before a shift can take place. And if that shift requires the Commission to comment, then we will subject that shift. We will go to the Ministry of the Department and we say, can you give us this information? We will send out a questionnaire that they've got to answer. And if they fill in all those, and then we may come to the conclusion, we don't think it's appropriate to shift this function. What we think should happen is that more money should be allocated, but that would require a whole process to take place before that happens. I will ask Mr. Pankaj to go quickly through the answers on table budgets and the issue around corporate governance. Pankaj?
In response to the honourable member's questions, can I refer you to page 58, table 7.1? That's an overview of the training performance of provincial governments over the past 3 years and over the next 3 years. I didn't want to give in the first instance, with respect to spending performance, I didn't want to give the impression of being a very widespread and big problem. Overall, provincial governments underspent by 2.25% over the past 3 years. However, the problem becomes much more noticeable when it comes to capital spending and infrastructure spending. And here the amount is 10.59% of an average over the past 2 years. So we wanted to specifically point out that in respect of infrastructure and often in respect of sports training, this is where underspending often happens, leading to growth of debt. In respect of your second question on the entrenchment of best practice and how far it's been extended, it was an initiative of the National Treasury. It's been passed down through to all the provincial treasuries in the sense that they now have dedicated units dealing with the best practice of infrastructure planning. And now units are being established within the provincial departments. And as far as I'm aware, they are comprehensive across all education departments. It's in the process of being established within the health department. And then gets spread out to the other ones like transport and housing. Then, thirdly, you asked a question around understanding caused by excessive adjustments. I don't have the data to give you a good sense of how common and how widespread that is, but it would be something we would be able to do. We compare the original budget to the adjusted budget, and if it would say more than 10 or 15%, it's probably excessive in respect to the capacity of the department to spend. And then that would have, and if we can measure that up against how much the understanding there is, we'll be able to tell you to what extent it happens. But unfortunately, I don't have a full data on that.
Okay, I think we covered basically all the questions. I don't know if there's anything else that we can discuss. In terms of assets from municipalities, we won't recommend. If we get a request to recommend transfer or shifting of functions, we make sure that that question in the checklist is dealt with and so on. So I think, you know, that would help us.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that this shifting of these water services and infrastructure to municipalities basically happened before the FFC Amendment Act, which basically brings in the issue that the Commission had to comment. I think the Amendment Act happened in 2003 when the shifting or the decision on the shifting of that function to municipalities was taken in 2001. So obviously the Commission did not get any opportunity to put that to the test. So what the Honourable Member is raising, that there are certain assets that have not been shifted because they're in a bad state, one would say it might actually be a very good thing that they should not be shifted in such a state, because then you're shifting a responsibility plus the financial responsibility to a municipality, which might not be accompanied by that. Because the key principle, I think, when we made a certain comment at that stage, even though it was not a requirement to go through in detail what the shift itself involved, the key principle was that the funds must follow the function. So whatever DWARF was spending on those issues should also have been shifted to the receiving municipality. And that was the only key principle that the Commission referred to at that stage. But I would suspect that in terms of the checklist, if one goes through the checklist, you can actually easily pick up those kinds of issues and make certain recommendations on how they have to be dealt with.
Thank you very much. You've covered all your presentations, you've answered all the questions. I just wanted to ask from DWARF if you have anything on this presentation that you maybe wanted clarity on or that you wanted to speak to.
Yeah, at least for me, just acknowledge that there is a lot of input of what I presented to you here, and we'll engage with them later on, given the nature of activities we have presently, which embrace delegation and assignment at the same time. But the other thing that when it comes to the model on constitutional mandated basic services, the issue that I would like them to respond to is with respect to the integrity of data they are using to give effect to that particular model. Because the difficulties so far for the 2 months I've been with DWARF, the difficulties I've had has been to call on operational managers to justify some of the figures they are giving me to support your budget request. Now, therefore, if you are saying that particular model is workable, perhaps can you share the source, because I'd like to have more integrable, more reliable data that will inform even also our processes of trying to strategically plan for activities.
Is it something you find them to speak to now, or something you would want them that you want to engage them on? Okay. Thanks. You don't have to. You will engage later on. Thank you very much. For the time, I'm not going to allow many more because I'm actually going to close this session because I need to. We have two officers need to give a full presentation in another minute. A pull up. I'm going to allow one pull up session. Okay. To you.
No, thank you. I'm glad to know that it is a South African paying challenge. But I would like to know exactly how the Commission works in order to make it possible for it to say what it recommends or approve. It is a product of research on the ground. Because I come from a rural area where people learn for services.
Thank you, Shivani.
Thank you. I think we have the Commission's core business is to undertake research, and most of our research, depending on what aspects we cover, is undertaken through consultations with government departments, with local spheres. We also go, for example, for education. Recently, we did research on learner support materials. And we went to questioners, we actually went to the rural areas, we go to the provinces, we go to local governments, we interview, we do empirical research. with respect to some data, we actually go through the department's raw data. We have a data and information unit at the Commission, which is, has a relationship with CAP South Africa and the Reserve Bank. So all our data is drawn from those official sources and from government departments. And so, you know, we've been operating now for the past 13 years. And all of our research is very based on empirical research that we undertake at local levels and some government departments and consultation with them. I think what we need to do in future is to make sure that we can invite you to some of our seminars and you can get copies of our research output so you can check for yourself.
Thank you very much for that. I must thank you for the presentation and the way you handled the question. As I said, I don't think I'm the only one that has the first meeting with you. But it's all very welcome and it was all very professionally done, very clear. So I thank you. The committee, as you well know, for the past 13 years it's been open to the public. Anybody can sit in and listen. So you don't have to leave, you don't have to. You can stay with us and listen to the other presentations you're going to receive from the department. If you have to leave, then you can stay or you can leave. Okay? But thank you very much for the work that you put in to present, to come to and see us today and to present to us. Thank you very much. Now over to the department. I don't know if the members, I haven't been here for a couple of weeks. It's actually a bad time for me to cheer. I have to catch up very quickly as I go along. So this morning when I was introduced to the new CFO, it was really a first meeting for me. So I don't know if the other members of the committee have met the new CFO. I'm now going to hand over to the new CFO and he will introduce himself and well, Noble we know very well, but it's over to you now.
I give a hand out to your heart with what will inform my presentation with the title of the Portfolio Committee on Water Affairs and Forestry, the quarterly finance report. If you look at the far corner, you'll see my name there and my office telephone contact on that particular handout. You all have it, the handout of the party.
I just wanted to say that I didn't want to introduce you because I was afraid to mispronounce your name.
No,
I'm pronouncing
correctly.
Okay.
Yeah, you're right. So my name is Ernest Magayaya. I joined the department on the 2nd of July. I suppose that I met some of you, particularly I met Honorable September, the chairperson. When we came for the budget speech, I was specifically invited to accompany the other team. By then, I was with the National Treasury. I hadn't joined them, but I think on that particular day or the day before the budget speech is when the cabinet had made a decision that perhaps the department could consider making an offer to me. So it was in that light that the minister specifically asked that I join the rest of the team to come and attend the parliamentary proceedings when she was making the budget speech. So my assumption all along has been that I met everybody in the portfolio committee, but that may be wrong because not everybody may have been in the house that particular afternoon. Now, having said that, I joined the department at a time where the minister has already come up with one particular goal for her term of office, and that particular goal is to have a clean financial audit by end of the financial year that will be ending on 31st March 2009. And therefore, even when I arrived on the 2nd, that was the brief that I received from her and the DG then, that my mandate generally and in terms of my activity and those of the Deputy CFO, for information is the Deputy CFO also, will in future also come and have a continuity to do, is to ensure that we have sound financial management systems in place that would lead to one qualified audit opinion by the year, I mean for the year ending 31st March 2009. So that's my brief when I joined about 2 months ago, now about two and a half months actually. Now therefore, the report you're going to have is based on that particular background and is based on the other engagement the acting CFO had with you in the previous quarterly report. Now, the background, why you may want to ask why this particular goal has been set by the minister, the Honorable Minister Hendricks. The reason is that 2005, the Exco and Top Management at Dwarf took a decision to ensure that the financial management of the department is improved and is placed on a sound footing. And as a result of that, certain initiatives were undertaken, especially in the last quarter of the financial year. Now, the impact of those particular initiatives will not necessarily be fully realized in the annual report you'll be seeing in due course, but there have been some indications that the results are coming through, as it will be evident from the audit report, the detailed audit report that will be accompanying that particular annual financial statement. So we expect, therefore, the impact of this type of exercise that we engaged in to be felt more positively in the year 2008 and 2009. Now, for historical reasons, obviously, the department is engaged in the trading activities, which of course include sale of water supplies and services. The position of the department so far, if you have engaged with them reasonably in the past, is that they don't sell water. What they sell is water supplies and services. Now, whether you want, I know that one has been questioned before, especially by the Office of the AG, that we should be viewing the water in our dams as one of the inventories, and therefore we should also be attaching a value to that particular inventory. So it's something that we'll continue engaging with him on. Now, the sale of water-related services obviously gives us certain challenges, and these challenges require that within the medium term, we should migrate those particular activities out of the department. And in the sense that all transactions affecting water-related activities should be reported separately from the activities on the main exchange account, which is vote number 334. As a matter of fact, because of that, when you get your annual report, because this time around we didn't bring the annual report because it's still in the press, you'll realize that the financial statement for the water trading entity and for the main exchange account are presented separately in that particular annual report. Now, as part of the financial improvement intervention, which were prompted by the advanced audit opinion from the Auditor General, required us to pay attention to the restructuring of the finance branch, especially at the region and at the head office. It also called on us to look for additional support from an accounting firm. This one, they were engaged sometime last year to provide additional skills that will enable us to give effect to some of the changes or some of the recommendations the Auditor General had made when he expressed adverse opinion for some of our financial statements. This also required that we implement an enterprise resource planning software, which is SAP. This one went live in the last quarter of 2006 with a bit of difficulties, and we are therefore in the process of doing the refinement. I'll talk more about these later on. Coupled with the issue of implementation of SAP as a new system within a cash-based accounting environment, it became necessary that the existing staff should be taken through a training program. And this is what's going on. Some of the training has taken place, and some aspects of that training are yet to take place. Those of you who have been keen observers since the IT systems came into being in government, some of the systems you cannot expect that they'll be implemented within a 3-month period or a 1-year period. They have implication of such a nature that the implementation process can take up to 3 years, and hence the results of the implementation of the enterprise resource planning software that we want to use in order to have accrual the financial statement we will expect that they will ultimately be realized sometime in 2008-2009 fiscal year. Now, in doing all this particular reform, we have paid attention also to a key element that has led to the qualification previously, and that is the asset management. As we talk about even shifting of function and perhaps operating on the principle of funds must follow the function, there is a particular challenge that Duavas has faced over the years, and that's that they didn't know the value of the assets, and in certain cases, by the way, the location of those particular assets. So we are taking all these major initiatives together alongside in order to ensure that by 2009 we have made positive progress in addressing the questions from the Auditor General within Binge on the on our financial system. Now, having said that, therefore, my presentation, what I intend to do, there will be a bit of PowerPoint presentation here, but the whole purpose of PowerPoint, the presentation, which was not emailed to you earlier or forwarded to you earlier, is just to amplify already what you have before you, which is covered under paragraph 5.3 and 5.4 of the document that is before you. Now, but for now, what I'll do, having highlighted the background against which I'm reporting, I need to indicate to you that we have brought number 34, which is our main exchequer fund, the allocation from Parliament, the appropriation, which is shown on page 2 of the handout that I've given you. In terms of the MTF, the 2007 MTF, the allocations are shown as 7.1. In total, this particular financial year, including the rollover that we were allowed by National Treasury of January 14, we are expected to be managing a budget of 5.6 billion for this particular financial year. This will grow to 6.6 in 2008 and 9, and then 7.8 in 2009 and 2010. Now, the rollover of that I'm talking about of 340,000 includes money that is for about 14 million for the transfer of skills to municipalities, and the balance is meant for the hook dam activities, which were delayed during the 2006-2007 financial year. Now, if you look on page 3, on the day of assumption of duty, it happened to be that this is the time National Treasury wanted to have the deed, the new funding proposal. We have had engagements with them. We gave them our bid. Some of them were found to be overpriced. We had a bilateral meeting with them last Thursday. And hence I felt strongly that instead of waiting until our next engagement, when they are finally approved, that I report to you on what sort of progress we are making on this particular front. We made a deal for additional funding to replace donor funds. We have certain projects within DUAP which are donor funded, and the concern of the Honorable Minister was that should this particular donor pull out, what would happen? And this is what you may have heard of through our annual report, Masud Babane, phase 2, program phase 2, and we are now on phase 3. That particular Masud Babane program, which is on sanitation, is funded mainly by the EU, by the EU member countries. And therefore the minister became concerned. We tried to cut that particular program and request additional funding from National Treasury, and we are still engaging with them to see if they can support that particular program during the next MTF. There is issue also around additional capacity within DUAF and of course the implementation of the Forest Charter. Additional capacity are referring to additional warm bodies within DUAF, skilled warm bodies. that was one of our bids that we are trying to negotiate with the National Treasury after our bilateral meeting. And then the question around national regional bulk water and trade for food. I would imagine that if my memory doesn't serve me right, there have been some malactivities about Arbor Week where some more of the honorable members of parliament should have participated. And particularly Arbor Week, the launch was done in Karankua, in Pretoria, by His Excellency the President. Now that particular initiative is also going to go on as part of the forestry branch activities. And it's one of the bids that we have submitted to the National Treasury Fund during the next MGF. Then we have working for water, working on fire, and working on the wetland, which is also another bid we submitted to National Treasury. I said I should share with you that, and this particular figure should be approved in the form in which the arrow with some slight amendment, the MTF figures that are referred to in 2.1, table 2.1, will obviously be changed. The baseline figures will then change. Now, of course, as we have that particular money that we are talking about, the additional funding for the next 2008 MTA period, the question that comes, it may come from you, it may come from the National Treasury or another stakeholder interested, including the Financial Fiscal Commission, it will be that how well have we done with the spending on what we already have. Now, this is what's depicted in Table 3.1. The bus system we are using to report on these figures for information is not amended in a way that it will report on commitment, meaning projects which have been approved or contracts which have been approved, but the money has not been dispersed. So what you see here is exactly is what has been dispersed. Instead, it does not reflect our commitment. For instance, the commitment of contracts that have already been signed for water resource management, most of them have not been reflected in the expenditure in Table 3.1. As you notice on that particular page, we are behind what we would have expected to have been on a certain basis, where we would have expected to be. On a certain basis, in the uniform expenditure, we should be at about 41% of the budget as of the end of August. But this is not the case here. We are at 32%, and the reason for this are part of the reason, not all of them, part of the reason are highlighted on page 4 of the document that is before you. One of the reasons, obviously, the indication, before we could start spending the 340 million that was rolled over, we needed a formal approval from National Treasury, which only came to my desk sometime towards the end of July. Now, there's also part of the money we have on that on the budget is to do the bulk water infrastructure. We needed to register the project with the National Treasury. This was done and it was just approved last week. It was approved last week, and there are 300 million and 450 for conditional grant for bulk infrastructure has not been spent yet. And that's the reason, that's one of the key reasons why you will find part of the expenditure is lagging behind. When you come to program number 4, which deals with forestry issues, the charter was launched on 25th of May, and obviously soon after that charter is when we could start spending money on the charter, because part of the budgetary allocation for the current fiscal year for that particular program relates to the implementation of the charter. So hopefully we should be able to report progress of that particular program in the coming quarter. The water resource management, I've already explained that. It's about the hoop dam, the amount of about 300 million, which was rolled over. The expenditure just started going through. I think we have signed a number of contracts for the expenditure on the hoop dam. So the exact amount which we will have spent on that project will be evident in our next report. Now, I'm not sure whether you used to have before a progress report of the water trading account in terms of figures, but if you didn't have, you would expect this. And what you have before you is just put there specifically in order to put me on top to ensure that the issues around water trading account are sorted out in the coming months. The SRP that I've talked about, the Enterprise Resource Planning software that I've talked about, has been implemented specifically to address water trading accounting issues, including billing, among others, the user water user charges. Now, for example, the Catchment Management Agency item appearing as revenue or income on Table 3.2, Catchment Management Agencies, where we show that we have only managed bills 4%. It's a billing problem that is associated with the current system and which will need to be sorted out as part of the refinement on the SAP implementation. You would also, the other thing that I would like to highlight for that particular table is the second last line, which is, there is something there which talks about funded by transfer from the main exchange account. This is the augmentation amount that is initially transferred to the water trading account from the main exchange account. So it's transferred periodically, and so far, by the end of June, we are transferred to as a documentation amount, 173 million in this year. Now, right now, allow me, Chairperson, to highlight very briefly. You'll get a detailed report from the auditor. You contain the annual report from the AG. Item number 4 on page 6. In this case here, I would like to speak briefly on the outcome of 2006-2007 audit, which has already been concluded. The report has already been signed, and also we can say that it's now in the press, including other financials that need to accompany to be part of the annual report. On the main exchange account, there is a qualification, and on the water trading account, there is a disclaimer, and the reason for that particular disclaimer is mainly around the data management and the property, plant and equipment, which could not be verified, the figures could not be verified. Fiscal verification proved that this was a problem, and this was attributable to the new system that was implemented in the last quarter of 2006. That was a key source. I'm not saying it's the only one, but that was the main source of the disclaimer on the water trading account. The qualification on the main exchange account is also as a result of movable assets and other assets that are reported under Board number 34. Now, cause of concern for us here will be, or even for me personally, given my position right now in the department, and I would imagine that will be the concern also of my colleagues there, would be what are the mechanisms that are in place that will ensure that we get over the issues that have already been highlighted by the Auditor General. I've highlighted a few of them, action steps in form of paragraph 4.1, 4.2, and 4.3. Those that we said were major for you to get to know about them. The issue of non-compliance with the policies and procedures in the area of supply chain management and in the area, of course, of how to disclose our financials in accordance with the general accepted accounting practice. I will not go into the details of that. The only thing that I can report is that we are therefore, in terms of suggested action on how to deal with this particular issue, the implementation of SAP is one of the instruments or the tools that we want to ensure that we comply with accrual. A comprehensive training program on accrual and also on the new financial system is key on the agenda, both in the region and also in the head office. The hiring of additional personnel in form of SAP super users and other people that will enable us to transact on SAP is also one of the key items or tasks that we want to ensure that it's carried out before the end of the year. A question also broadly which comes in and which leads to the qualification and perhaps the disclaimer on the water trading account is the issue of my financial management practices and the capacity. In the past, of course, the department operated both accounts, the main exchequer and the water trading account on a cash basis. And of course, when we implemented, when the department implemented SAP, it became necessary that some of the figures that are on cash basis should be modified and be captured on SAP on a core basis. Now, this proved challenging, and those are the challenges we are addressing through a refinement process as we go ahead with the implementation of SAP. But besides that, in order to do those refinements effectively, there is the issue of restructuring the finance branch. At the time I'm talking, of course, I've already mentioned to you that a position that was never in the structure before was the position of a deputy CFO. On the interview that was chaired by the Honorable Minister in March this year, when we were being interviewed for the job, a recommendation was taken that in light of the audit queries that have come for, that the position of a deputy CFO be created. But besides that, another recommendation that has come through is that the officials that handle the main exchequer transactions and those that handle the trading account transactions should be separate and distinct, clearly distinct. For that reason, therefore, two chief directors have been created, a director that will deal, headed by chief director, that will deal with the main exchequer activities, and the chief director that will deal with the water trading activities. Now, the position for the chief director for main exchange accounts will be the initial pass very soon to be advertised for us to fill it. And the one for the water trading account, there is already somebody who is in charge of that particular water trading account. Now, at the chief director level. Now, therefore, the restructuring that we're talking about is in that particular sense. At the regional level, there is also another thing that has come, which has hung to us for some time, and this has been that the head of corporate services and the head of finance was one person. That one, for some financial systems purposes, that's untenable and is unacceptable. And for that reason, part of the restructuring that is taking place in the region is to ensure that the head of finance and the head of corporate services report to the regional director, and it's not one person. They are two separate human beings, and they will be able to report to the head of the region, who is currently, most of the regions now are headed by employees who are appointed at the level of regional director. The other issue which comes in on the auditor, which we receive in the audit report, is the question of inadequate documented business processes. A number of processes, especially with the water trading accounts, were not well documented, and therefore the auditor general found it hard, especially around leave, around data management, and around deposits. We have a lot of amounts. I think at the time when the audit was being done, there was about $500,000 in a substantial account. And that was just simply that the processes that we used to collect the funds and deposit money in the bank was not appropriate and it was not properly documented. In this particular case here, we have already engaged a team of consultants, which I chair on bi-weekly basis, to help us develop these processes and do what we may call re-engineering of the water trading accounts. Included under this particular project is to establish a process culture which can unlock additional revenue potential for the water trading account. An example, by the way, of this particular item that I'm mentioning is a case whereby Eskom uses some water from the scheme, but it has never been billed for it. That's an example of what I mean by unlocking the amount, and because of the process that we have in place and etc., which may need to be revisited. Now, of course, the initiative that I'm talking about under that particular project will enable us to address questions around the data policy, coming up with the data policy on how to do the collection of existing overdue accounts. It will also lead us to scrutinize some of the transactions that are posted on the water trading account via an item mapping that is well mapped on the system. And having a dedicated person in the supply chain management unit, for example, to handle the invoices from suppliers and etc. Now, those are some of the issues that they'll be looking at as part of that project. The project should come to an end, and in fact, not just coming to an end because time has expired, I hope that we'll have achieved what we want, substantially what we want from them by the end of June 2008. Now, briefly, therefore, so given what I've said about the issues around the questions that the Auditor General raised during the previous audit and even the most recent audit, I would like to highlight two major points I've already mentioned about SAP, SAT, which is on page, under paragraph 5 on page 9. What I would like to highlight right now for you and for your information is under 5.2 on page 9, and is supported by this particular PowerPoint presentation that we see here with us. Now, in addressing the asset management issues in Dua, it became necessary that a team be appointed. This team is going to cost us not less than $35 million at the end of the day to address issues around asset management, in order for us to be able to know where our assets are as well and what value they should have in our books. The assets I'm talking about are of infrastructure nature, in this case, infrastructure nature. I'm talking of canals, dams, wells, and many other things that we've got, the mechanical and electrical components that go with such as things. Now, this particular project was, of course, I've already pointed out, because it was part. What prompted the project to be, to have a project charter for this particular exercise
has to do with the qualification of the advance opinion from the Auditor General. Now, we want to look at a situation whereby we have improved infrastructure asset management in the within Dua, and which will therefore enable us to have information we need for robust data for tariff setting. And that should be based obviously on the information contained in the asset register, which is currently incomplete according to what the Auditor General has given us. When we talk about assets, the infrastructure assets we're talking about here is the bulk supply scheme, the integrated water schemes like the valve that's connected to the Lesotho Highlands, the gating wires and the support services in form of workshops, administration buildings, houses, electricity and many other things. Those are the infrastructure assets that we are focusing on. You'll notice that forestry is not covered here. Forestry assets are not here. They were not part of the scope of this particular exercise. As of that particular time. And of course, I've shaded land and substitute issues. Some of the schemes, obviously, they are land, they may be land claims, there may be other issues that come with that, and which need to be attended to under this particular project. Given its magnitude, it's doubtful that we can, for example, stand here, myself and another person that will come after me, if you want to come tomorrow, to say that we will have a complete asset register by the end of this calendar year. That's not possible. Because critical visits, those are dams, a study tour, some of the countries that have pioneered the foundation of water resource management infrastructure is being designed for that, in order to understand exactly on how to value the asset and its implication on the tariff we charge the water users. Now, at the time when this exercise began, the dams that were there were valued, were estimated to be of a value of about 47% of the asset value in the water resource management. We had canals, 3,800 kilometers, tunnels, pipelines, 76 power stations, and the list can go on. That was what was estimated. But what turned out to be the case was that we may end up by the end of November, we would have traced an additional 200 dams. Some of them which were in former in the former homeland, which are never on the system of well at all. At the end of the day, that's a challenge. Now, where are we right now? We are at this particular stage whereby the well is green. We are not yet. The Asian plan, I think nobody has even talked about this. The Asian plan has not been worked. We are currently at that particular phase two of this particular project. Collection of data and capturing and validation of data, technical and financial reports, infrastructure asset management plans, those ones have already been being discussed already in the draft form. So we have not moved to phase three yet on that particular exercise. The organizational context of this, of course, is the question of the SAP implementation, because the information we capture through this exercise would have to be on the financial model, would have to be captured on our current financial system. And of course, something that Dua has never had for a number of years is the corporate risk management unit. It will result, some of the recommendations that will come from this will end up coming up with a system that will then be overseen by a director or a chief director within Dua to manage the data, share the data. We do dump searches, there's no doubt about that. We do some work on dump searches as part of this management. But it's not yet coherent enough to warrant a very good opinion from the auditor. Then the Quinana project I'm talking about movable assets. That one is already going on, and in fact the project will close by February. We have done already verification of assets where they are, they have been valued. What is left is to put them on the system, and to make printouts from the system to ask individuals that are responsible for those particular assets to sign off on those particular forms from the system. Now, those assets we are talking about, the 402 so far that we know, but the others that are coming up as we do this exercise, are scattered in all those regions.
which means a lot of trouble, a lot of night out and visiting of my appointments and other meetings in all those particular regions. The deliverables where I'm going to talk about this lecture, I don't think I need to go beyond here, is training on asset management, valuation methodology, coming up with the valuation methodology. A question that is there is that do we separate canals from the dam? Do we separate, how do we treat, for example, the electrical components on the system? And then the inputs on the tariff setting, we should be able at the end of the day have some information that we can rely on to inform our tariff setting. And of course there should be an asset register in place which can then be form the basis for the audit exercise each year. I think this one via the other stuff I will not go in. The only thing that I can say is the progress today. What progress? And that's why I decided to give this particular slide for you. That we are talking about doing something. What is it that we are exactly doing? And that's what I want to share with you briefly on this particular matter. Now, there are a number of items there. In overall terms, the project is 38% complete as of last week, Thursday. On why I want to see is only 38% complete. A related initiative also on this particular matter is about the revenue engineering, which I've already mentioned, and you go on page 11 on the handout that was given to you earlier. There's a summary there of the key streams of what you are looking at under that particular project. I mentioned about this in passing earlier on, but the details if you want to say fine, what is the progress on that particular project, what is it that we want to get from that particular project, it is summarized on page 11 of the handouts you have. It's organizational and governance issues, business processes, coming up with systems. Before SAP, for example, before it was implemented or before we went live with SAP, we have all along had WOMS. WOMS, which is a database for world water users. That's where we record your details and all that. Now, those particular, the data from that system to start, we need to be checking on the integrity and for it to be a reasonable, form a reasonable testing for billing purposes. Then there are issues around legal and commercial, whereby we need to review all contracts of the water users we have and see whether there is anybody that is using water illegally, for example, you should be having a contract with us or you should be dealing with them in a legislative manner. Now, briefly, that's what I would say about that particular initiative. There is also a slide on it, a PowerPoint presentation on it, but I'll not go to it at present unless in the process of answering some of your questions, if it will be necessary for me to go to that particular slide. Now, as we come from one audit to another, of course, we are reminded that there will be obviously be another audit coming, and that audit, of course, will kick off sometime in November this year. And the auditor need to find that prepared, and that's what they're trying to do through this particular project. So there will be an audit steering committee to look into the massive issues around what that will enable the auditor to get the answer to the question that it's giving us, and to have some financial management system at the end of the day. In a nutshell, therefore, given the background I've shared with you when I assumed duty, or what you have been shared and what was shared with you earlier by the acting CFO then, Trevor, we are continuing with the financial management reform initiatives that were implemented as from 2006. Some new ones have come in, especially the revenue engineering exercise that I've mentioned. It only started in June this year. Now, the one on asset management, the one on enterprise asset management began sometime in February of this particular current year. Now, the magnitude of the exercise, especially on the enterprise-wide asset management, is something that we see, we'll be able to see the results, the positive results out of it after the current financial year. But at least we need to be reporting to the auditor and yourself the progress we are making in this particular regard. Underlying all those initiatives is skills, and retention of those particular skills. To the extent that functioning within public transport utopia than where we want to go under the Public Service Act is proving to be, as much as the spirit, the spirit is good, that's on the act, but it's proving to be an inhibition of the process that we want to make. Appointing and retaining somebody with SAP experience, maybe a CEO or even a BCom owner for over 3 years is proving to be a problem even on the salary over there. Those are the challenges that you have. Where we're able to attract anyone so far within the, our city. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you very much, Mr. Ayaya, for the presentation. Now it's open to members to ask any questions. But before members do that, I just want to say that we appreciate the fact that you're in the job for 2.5 months. But members are not going to ask questions based on your 2.5 months of departure. Which means what I'm saying is that the questions won't be personalized, won't be personal questions to you. It is the questions will be questions to the department, right? So people come and go in the department, but there has to be a departmental memory. So the questions will be based on that. So I'm mentioning this so that you shouldn't take the questioning personal. Please don't say, I haven't been there before. The department has always been there. Although the people have been changing from time to time. Over to the members. Mr. Kibian.
Thank you, Mr. I think this is a comprehensive presentation. But we have heard this comprehensive presentation before. Waste paper is still around. It is happening to see that there is quite a lot of improvement so far as trying to answer the question raised by the Auditor General. But I would like to see my own position. As far as the needs of the people who put me here at rest. Instead of coming to present this year, I'll be happier to see that whatever we do or what we hear here will enable me to give a report back to the people and say this and this is actually coming. And you can expect this and that at such and such a time. Because I have also been evaluated by the people who can be here. Now, perhaps you are on the right track to see if such things are actually. And I'm happy to see you here. You are too articulate. And I think your presence is also kind of there. Those are my comments.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Jason. Actually, my what I need to find out from Ayaya with regard to the statement that is just indicated saying that there is water being used by Eskom and being charged. And I just want to link to elaborate on that why, and on the other hand, with regards to the asset management, I'm very much glad that you are not really trying to put all the assets so that you can record them. And on the other hand, I wanted to know about the question of you just indicated that you are not selling water, but you know, yeah, you're not selling water, but it's still basically. So I wanted you maybe to expand it on that one so that we can understand exactly what you mean by that, because it is known everywhere that people are are in water and they have to pay for their services for the water that they use, that are given to them. And I also need to you to tell us exactly what here you indicated from the Auditor General's report that there were some problems that were actually identified with regard to non-compliance of policy and procedure. Here you just indicated that there are some measures that you are taking. So I just wanted you maybe to explain exactly when are you going are you intending to start implementing it, and also what is going to be the impact of that on from the community on the ground. Because now, as Honorable Tian has indicated, that people on the ground really need to want to watch how you saw it in the past 2 weeks in the industry there and around the Northwest. People were protesting, pushing those big tents with no water. So, you could see really elaborate on that.
Thank you, Commissioner.
Thank you, Commissioner. Well, we welcome the new CFO. Congratulations on the new position. Now, Commissioner, the report that we received, if one looks at it, you simply give a community that looks like Himalayan tarp. And for Himalayan tarp, we need hydrogen in the future. I do not know that we have the excellent people. Now, what I'd like to know is the question of personnel. You know, you always talk, all departments, you talk about capacity. You continuously talk about capacity. And why is this capacity not to be good? Be strengthened. Now, I want to ask the question, does everyone have to be an MBA in your department? Does everyone have to be a CA in your department? Of course, you must have quite a number of them. You see why I want to ask this question, because of capacity. So, if you have to have MBAs, well, of course, that's going to be a problem. We have not millions of MBAs. So, then why aren't we filling these positions? Where is the blocking? Where is the hitch? You know, come and check. When you look at page 10, first of all, I think, with respect to the CFO, well, there's no time frame set here. Well, of course, actually, in that time, I do not know whether if I look at here, but I'm just looking at page 10.
Excuse me, let's not have a dialogue or whatever, just a separate meeting. Can we say in this meeting?
Now, there's not a criticism, but you know, some kind of a time frame, because why? You know, these are very huge tasks here. When you look at page 10, then when you also look at page 11, when you have this workshop of the honor, the 8th of June. So, I think where the department, you have to look at what time frame. I don't think you want to go into the other number of questions you have, but of course you are a new person to speak. And you have any support and you do hope.
Excuse me, Smekai. It's an old department.
Okay.
It's an old department. It has always been there. So don't worry about the new button in the seat.
Yeah, right, yeah, no, that's true. For instance, yeah, I can raise the question. When we come over, of course, we mentioned the rotten system, right? The apartment is in the rotten one. But it still has systems. So when we inherited it, so we should have shifted, you know, removed all the bad ones and put in new ones, isn't it? So therefore, one would like to know this period, you know, that is taking place. Right. The question is that what we are concerned about, and the minister, what would happen when we present the next financial statement? That is the 2007-2008, that are working towards a unqualified report, or what we call a true report, from the minister. I think that's what the minister is talking about, because of the fund. So, anyway, we want to wish you every success in your communication.
Thank you very much. Any further questions for any other member? In that case, just before you answer, Mr. I didn't mean don't worry about the person in any disrespectful way. It's just that information that we need should be in the department. Because the department has always been there. That's what I mean. You know, we understand that you you're probably on a sharp learning curve as to how this process functions, and there are many things that you have to take care of. So we understand that. You know, any new person that comes into any new job has to find his or her feet first. So that part we understand. It's just that we don't want members to curtail their questions and then the committee not getting the information that we really need to discuss and deliberate and make informed decisions at the end of the day. That's what I'm driving at. I'm interested to know, Mr. Ayaya, that, you know, we often in the past in this committee and in other committees have questioned the use of consultants to take things. And so I would like to know what were the number of consultants or teams of consultants at the end of the last quarter, and what is the increase or decrease over the past quarter that you're reporting on now, at what cost if there were an increase, and at what saving if there were a decrease, and then you know, to say that we will not know the number of assets belonging to the department by such and such a date. One can understand, it's not good enough, one can understand, let's say, that it must be an enormous cost. I think we should appreciate that. But it's not good enough to say that it won't be done by such and such a date without saying when it will be done. In this committee, we've always and are so adamant that we have to do things based on time frame. There has to be time frame. Nothing can be open-ended. Because what we do in this department and in this committee affects people's lives directly. So please, can you give us an idea as to when the asset register will be done? For instance, you are able to tell us that 400 assets have been found. Certainly then, therefore, you should be able to tell us about what time period they were found, and what the difficulties were, and how you foresee it, how you see yourself improving things going forward. There has to be some ideas. Since you have come over a period finding 400 assets that you didn't know existed before, we must have now, after you found those 400 assets, you must have some experience of what has to be done. Therefore, I think we would be correct to assume that you must have now some ideas as to how you're going to go forward. So if you could just speak on that. The last point I wanted to make in relation to this, those assets. As you find the assets, are you making an assessment? And again, I mean the department. Right? As you find these assets, are you making an assessment as to how these assets will contribute to service delivery, improving the lives of our people? Because if you call it an asset and not a liability, then it has to improve the lives of our people at a certain point. It has to be something that we can make use of. Thanks. Over to you.
No, I'm the chair, Mr. Ayaya. I will raise my hand and I will give Dan the chance, but it's your chance now to answer this.
At the bottom line is, people, are we going to meet the targets for sanitation? Are we going to meet targets for access to water by the ordinary people? Now, this one here, of course, it's a journey. I cannot say, it's a journey. And by 2008, at least we should have made progress on that. And therefore, I like the idea of a campaign. When I started speaking, by the way, remember, I've also been giving a campaign. 2009. The year ending in 2009. Now, therefore, whatever we have put in place, we have to make progress and we should have achieved the goal by 2009, another target we've been given in terms of the year. Now, when we refer to the individual interests like asset management and revenue engineering, those projects have a lifespan and they are deliverable within the lifespan. The lifespan for the revenue engineering project is end of June 2010. For the enterprise resource planning, the Ewamondi asset management, they are ended. It also means next year. Now, it has taken us from February, from the time February until end of July, to have reached where we are at present. Now, what is left therefore, by November, we should be 90% complete. By end of November, we should be 90% complete on the asset management process, meaning verification and evaluation. Now, there's an issue around the actual system that we use for the assets, to capture the asset information. That one is the one that would make us delay until sometime in the first quarter of 2008. But the actual verification and evaluation should be done by end of November for the assets. Now, in terms of deadlines, I think that one I will have addressed later. I will address it in that other fashion. Now, the other one which you may share your ask is about consultants, and I think other honorable members here will, your colleague here will also want to know this. But this question may not necessarily be coming from here alone. The question should be, I think the minister should be providing an answer in Parliament very soon. I know that we can push forward to answer. Now, the answer for the previous financial year is contained in the annual report, which I told you we did come with it. But in terms of the cost escalation is at about 30% for the question may be, are we able to get out of the consultant? For technical, for finance, it's possible. I can say in the 2008-2009, I don't think if I get the people that I want within the team, I will not need any consultancy operating within the finance function. But for technical services, the answer being, given the information that I have received in the last 2.5 months, I'd be lying to say that the numbers will go down. The reason is the 2010 high that has created very serious problems. And I've attended meetings both within Duab and outside Duab, where even the project contractors are coming back to negotiate the rest. And the reason for the negotiation is that they are never, when they did the quotation, they used price without knowing that things will change. The construction sector will change so much that they won't be able to retain an obvious case civil engineer on their project. Now, therefore, whether consultants, especially for technical services, I would say I'm doubtful that next year or even the year after that will have reduced the reliance on that particular case. For finance, that one I can say I would have reduced. For HR, I think also normal would have been say they would have done whatever we want to do with them. Which links up to the next thing of about, do we need the MBAs, do we need this, what is this, can we operationalize, what is this? I think that's what you're asking. At the level of a director, from the job evaluation that has been done for positions that are going to be advertised, we are looking at somebody that is a big component, plus 3 to 5 years experience at the level of the company. We are not looking for an MBA. We are not looking for a CA, although if we get a CA again, we will say hallelujah about that. It's not that well. But at the minimum, we are saying that if you have at least 3 years relevant experience and you have a BCom on the field of our interest, which will add value to us, we are ready to see if we can appoint you at the level of a director. We are going back to that law. I'm saying we are going back because a number of directors have worked through with the HR, like the National Treasury, have more than 5 years experience in the federal level of director.
So we're not necessarily looking at that. And when we talk about...
I'm sorry to interrupt. I'm going to ask, I have to ask you to be brief in your answers because we've got one more presentation.
Now, the water, the clarification around selling and water service services. Within the water charge, we have water discharge charge, which is an condition kind of charge. We don't really say that we have sold to you, let's say, 3 cubic meters and that's what we're charge for. If you look at our tariffs, our pricing policy, which we may ask to share with you on in future, actually, at this meeting, in the way Fiscal Commission has shared the information, you will see the components of our water charge. We don't try to say that this is the number of kilometers or kilo, I mean, cubic meters of water we are selling to you. It's the services that is based on the license. When you are licensed, you say, okay, you are a farmer, for example, and you need this amount of water over this certain period. With then, the tariff then is levied on the basis of the volume of what you are going to, I mean, the services that will be of water that is made available to you, including hydrological services, which may be made available to you, and other things that go with the water that you need. We don't really sell water to the municipalities are selling water to the residents in this case. Now, the ESCOM case is again a question of a contract. It's a question of a legal document and the billing. You start off by saying, fine, if you're paying any bill to the municipality member, we have our contract with the municipality. We will have expected that all contracts of ESCOM should then have been resolved. All contracts are complete, well verified, and we know what is exactly being sold. So it's a question of an agreement for that particular water scheme not having been reflected as part of the contract, therefore they were not paid for it. But it has been found to have been the case in this particular... I don't know what it happened to you. I think the other ones I've already dealt with them. About consultant PC general report, deadlines, I've already mentioned them. And the assessment whether the assets will make an improvement, the answer is yes. For information, in one of the homelands, there is a dam that was built, and there are people without water. The fact that we have identified and we know where it is, it's on our register. We will now come into the issue of maintenance, the issue of who is utilizing it. Because the link, the maintenance cost that will be incurred on such an asset must be linked to the water users that are benefiting from that dam or from the stream within the region. So by identifying where these assets are, true that some people may end up benefiting after we have known where they are. And when we do licensing for the water services or whatever sector that we are trying to sell, we'll be knowing which assets yeah, that are going to be utilized in that particular need.
Thank you, Mr. Ayaya. I'm not going to allow further questions on this because we need a presentation from Novo. I can't think of any of the questions you didn't answer. I think you've covered all. I've tried to note them as they were asked. Novo, I can only give you 15 minutes. Okay, and then there will be another 15 minutes for the members to ask you. 10 minutes for the members to ask you questions, and then you'll have 5 minutes in which to deal with the question.
Thank you very much, Chair. Good morning, Honorable Members. Good afternoon. Honorable Members, what I've done in this presentation, I've looked at the last one where I did the presentation to you, and then I've said in terms of the promises I've made, what have I delivered, and I will talk on the areas where we can have challenges. And at the end also, I will give you the areas where we'll be focusing for the next quarter. So we promised last time to deliver to deliver the policies for draft. As I indicated, Chairperson, the web policies, they were old, they've never been reviewed for the last 5 years. In some cases, there were no policies. So there were 2 cases where you had policies that were old, outdated, and then you had gaps where there were no policies, there were policies there. So what we've done, we've already reviewed the recruitment and selection policy, we reviewed the job evaluation policy, overtime policy, sexual harassment policy, the new one, the resettlement policy has been reviewed, AWMA is the new one, special needs reviewed, grievance policy is new, absenteeism and abgonment policy is new, document management and development policy is reviewed. These policies have been drafted. They are there, the copies are there. Now, in terms of the Labor Relations Act, we have to consult. Now, the process is about consultation. We have to consult managers, we have to consult employees and unions. So, by the end of October, they will be signing off. That is the signing off. In terms of the eradication of the globe, Chair, as I've also indicated in the past, in the past 5 years as well, we've been having backlog on grievances, dealing with grievances of employees, dealing with their misconduct cases, dealing with sentencing, you are reported to you, IOB cases, and also the issues around probation, management of probation. Last time also, I indicated to you that what we are doing also, we're trying to comply with the requirements of the Public Service Commission. We had 14 cases that were finalized out of the 21 from 2006, that was the backlog of 2006. And we are doing the investigation. But also with this grievance, you have to investigate. You have to appoint an investigation to investigate and then have the investigation finalized and submitted to the minister and then sent it to the Public Service Commission. And 6 out of 10, not 100, the 10 cases from 2007 investigations have been finalized, 6 out of 10. So they sent the collective test. Around performance management, Chair, we have signed the 750 work plans that have been signed for all 6 of them. We are busy with training of managers on how to manage performance. We are also busy with training of moderation committees, people that moderate performance results. We are also helping giving a hands-on support in terms of the drafting of performance agreements, the drafting of work plans, and to make sure that the performance agreements are also aligned to the strategic plan of the department. It's a process of strategy. You know, you have to take people through a process of training. So there's intensive training on board around performance management. The situation doesn't look good for 7-8 because the work plans by now, we supposed to have architect everybody draft, we supposed to have signed the performance agreement, we supposed to have signed the work plan. But as you see the really reviews that we have a trust problem because we are doing quality assurance and we are finding that it's not aligned to the strategy. We are returning back to managers to get aligned to the strategy. Because you need to have a performance management system, you need to be able to see what the department is moving in terms of implementation. So your performance management should be talking to your strategy. And when we give performance annual reports to Parliament, those annual reports should be revealed by the performance management themselves to say they're talking to the progress that we'll be giving to. So the alignment we are trying to do that. In terms of final assessment, for 6 and 7, we have done, we have been finalizing. What you do in government, that's another thing that we are grappling with in government. In 1 year, you have to do performance agreements for the following financial year. At the same time, you have to finish the assessment for the previous year. For the estimate, the assessment for all 5 or 6, the minister has not yet approved for the 21 for information evidence on delivery. For 6 and 7, people are still doing the assessment for the minister said she wants us to do systemization. So there's robust monitoring from the Minister of Justice around performance management. Particularly, she has started with performance at the cinema results. So she wants evidence of what has been delivered for people to qualify for cash bonus. So 5 and 6 has not been paid, 6 and 7 has not been done, and we are trying to comply with the needs of the expectations from the Minister. The 9 SMS is for people below the Deputy Director. Those have been paid. So if, when I come for the next session, Chairperson, I will give them exact figures. How many people have qualified for cash bonus and how many have qualified for cash bonus? In terms of training, Chairperson, we have trained people. We have done the induction. Also, we are working with Sambi. There's also a new program for senior managers called Wamgele Gile in government. We have inducted 15 managers. We have done competence assessment, training, monitoring and evaluation also in consultation with SAMD. We have also, in that case, the lower level employees, 80 of the new people, we have also done protocol training around how do we really, when you come to Parliament, how do you really have to set the things down. We have also done the other training of the lower level people, 761, it's an ongoing process. We have done service delivery improvement of service delivery 81 people, financed by the 30, training 25, acceptor training 10, moderation 10, frontline training that we train people who are secretaries, people who are assessing on how to conduct themselves when they interact with the public. Mentoring training, performance management, we have trained 1,000 people, finance training 11, internship training 75, talent management, on talent management 1, so the basic skills management principle 50. Around recruitment processing, we have reviewed another difficulty. I'm told that you've been associated, not only in Durban in general, there's a complaint around the time it takes to fill positions. What we've done in the department, we have re-engineered our procedure to really streamline and shorten the period we take to fill in positions. We have filled in for the past team, last quarter we have filled in 377 positions across that is your lower level up to your top. In terms of all, we have evaluated new positions, particularly for the region, support to the region, new positions that we created, we have evaluated 107, and we are busy also checking. And if you remember, I also made a promise last quarter to say, we are working on the structure as well. What has been happening in the past? The structure, the draft has been the structure for the past 10 years, the structure. And as you move people from draft, to local government. You must abolish those programs in that cases. At the same time, what's been happening, the positions have not been abolished for the past 5 years. What we've done now, we've gone to the structure, we are doing from a baseline position, cleaning the entire structure, who is a dwarf. We are verifying the people, the names of the people, the physical body, who is a dwarf, so that we can have the right number of the vacancies and we can respond to you. So the process is really moving very fast. We have also, as you are saying, we do check it. What we do, we go to contract, and well, also when you do an audit, you need to take it of the sequences. You cannot also use the people who are really in the information office to audit themselves. So you need to get a neutral person to come and audit the records. What we've done, we are auditing the bodies themselves. We are auditing the information of the employees themselves, and then we are verifying the payment, the payment code. That is, a person is paying, he pays from the trading account, also paying money. Draft is unique because draft has two accounts. Draft has the main account, a checker and the trading account. So some people are paid from the main, some are paid from the trading account. So we are verifying also the duplications, where sometimes we find people really appear twice in the number of lists. So, we are doing a robust training process, and also the minister is an area that is also driving. So we intend, as of by the end of October, we will be able to answer to you anytime, how many vacancies do we have, how many are filled, how many are not filled, how many people do we have, at what level do we have. That has been, as of a historical problem, but we are promising that it's really going to come to an end, that we have a clean record. So we are strong 35% closer to the project. And in the interim duty, also, what we've done some training here, especially around interim duty, and we process 20 cases, and probation is processed 20 cases. And also here, we have some challenges, and we are also getting some capacity, external capacity to assist with that area. And around transition now, processing the work that is taking place that will report to you for the future. We are busy with the foreign development of the change strategy for DWAP, human resources development strategy, human resources development policy is our plan, and then also there's also another project that is also triggered by the interest of the minister. We are auditing the corruption and fraud cases. How many cases we have, and how long have we been having those cases as well, and what has stopped us from finishing the finalizing the investigation? So we are working on that. Also, we are also implementing recommendations from the finalized investigations that we have in the department. Around talent management, certainly we are working very hard to get the performance agreement finalized for 7 and 8, and also the training of moderation committees, and also the training on performance management. And we're really looking forward to really reducing backlog on probation by 30% at the end of September this month. The finance system where is a draft. We are working on the issue you raised with us. We are getting the file covered, and that one also by the end of September. After the financial disclosures by senior managers, as you are aware, we have to submit them to the Public Service Commission every year. We have submitted 80 financial disclosures that have been signed off by the minister. Some questions are that they have the same day because questions around people are waiting to job somewhere. And in terms of the employee intended service funding, also we've got 40 cases that we have finalized. We intend to finalize the whole by the end of September. In our duty cases, to finalize them, 10 cases to finalize them. Also, critical vacancies verified and endorsed. Top management, we have to do that with the minister because he really wants to know how many vacancies do we have and why are we filling them if we have a need. And 30% of the job description, also in terms of the public health regulation, job description must be reviewed every 3 years. So we are in the process of doing that, 30% of that. Thank you very much,
Secretary. Thank you very much, Noble. Now, what I like about you is that you, every quarter when you come and report, you make promises. Right? And then you deliver on the promise, which is very good. I've just checked now my notes on the promises that you made last time. You delivered on all of them. You made another 5 promises now. Right? 3 of them will, you promised that they will be concluded by the end of September, that month. Other 2 by October, but later. In other words, these 5 promises, you are saying next time when you report again, you will report that they all implemented. Now, what I must say before members actually ask the questions is that this is what we like to see. Real progress. You promise, and remember I told you the last time, I like seeing all of those. I counted again, I told you the last time, I see all the words implemented. Last time you were here, you had many of those where you said, I said this, it's implemented. Okay? Then you made a number of promises, and this time again you come in and say, okay, these are the promises I made, and this is how far I got. Very good, Noble. Very good. So I will monitor these 5 for the next quarter. And I will caucus with the members and say, look, this is what I picked up, this is where he promised us. Yeah? So that's for me. I'm handing over to the members now. They might not be so as kind as I am today. Mr. Sibian?
Sir, I'm always impressed by the presenter's frankness about Christian Shakes. But I realize that the department itself has a lot of problems. It's now 13 years. Some of these things have been done long ago. Perhaps it is simply because you see new faces time and again. There we see my good friend there. Those whom we used to see are no longer here. I don't know whether that will make it possible for you now to stay a little longer until we finish our promise. There are people who were here and they are no longer here. You are speaking about problems in the department, recruitment in the department. Why should we keep on recruiting people when there were people in some of the schools? Position. Some of them people disappear. Now, it is good to see actually how you finish your promises. Careful, the department is careful on par with what we need to see on the ground. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mine is on pension. I just want to find out how many cases have you finalized as we speak, as we know that the draft gives me a big problem when we come to pension. Most of the people who leave this department, they are not receiving their pension. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Shiva.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My question is actually based on the probation cases. We just on the slide number 8 here, it indicated that the probation cases tend to have been processed. So I just want to find out how many are still outstanding and what going to happen, because we were talking about the vacant high number of agencies when we were given the first presentation before. And I also wanted to know about there are cases here of fraud. So, and I just want corruption and fraud here. So I just wanted to know how, when you were doing your audit, how many cases are you still, are you working on with regards to corruption and fraud cases? I just wanted to find that from that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for my case.
Mine is a compliment. I think we have received this report. I think it has triggered and taken exactly where we are. And I think the work that we carry out, I think we'll be able to overcome very many problems that we set to be in the department.
Thank you very much for my case. Just before Nobu, you respond, I just want to say that everybody in present is invited for lunch in the Marx Bowling restaurant. You can invite a few friends if you want to. So some of our friends that we catered for was also not there. And then if we all go for lunch, then it gives the members to engage with the department in a more relaxed atmosphere. It's amazing what you can get done in an atmosphere like this. Noble, how about you?
In terms of the pension, I'm going to, I wanted to suggest to the member that I prepare the review for you and then email it to the office of the pension so that it can be given to you. I don't want to give you address here for you and the probation one. I can do that. That's the review. But in terms of the court case, we have 22. We've got 22. 5 have been finalized with the Public Service Commission, the previous court is one. But the new chief director for internal audit, also we are working together to get them finalized. So what it means, you sort of launch an investigation, you appoint an investigation officer to go and do the investigation, then advise the minister on how to take the case forward. But 5 have been finalized and reported. And you still have to report to the Public Service Commission so they can report to the people, because what we find, some of these cases are people who went to the hotline and sort of indicated to the department of the court. They have to respond back to the people. So far, they have done that. But we are working there to set up, because also the minister indicated care and anxiety around the time it's taking to resolve it.
Is that all of them?
Yes,
it was quick today, right? No? Not so bad. Yes, please.
Now, I didn't show you the presentation of the revenue engineering expert, but if you were to look on slide number 9, there is a plan, the plan of action with the deadline, clearly in the material. You are given a hard copy of the book, which you look on slide number 9. Yeah. Now, the issues she's trying to address are not unique to corporate politics. There are issues that are also being addressed. We are combining people issues mainly. They are also impacting on how far we can push the 90% process that I talked about and implementation of even the policies that she has indicated that they have already implemented. So it's not a silo that is normal and normal law. Other people are also on board. The position of the chief internal auditor who was assumed guilty, the chief director internal auditor, also assumed guilty on the second. He reports to the DG. There's already an action plan with the that been submitted to the DG before they decided to deliver. And therefore, part of the thing that we're talking about implementation of those policies is part of the action plan, or another policy that I may be in charge of, is part of his brief to audit them and ensure that they are functioning. Maybe
in teaching where one to request specifically that we come with that plan, the ministry, and maybe progress on the next one.
Thank you very much. I think it would be a good time to retire for lunch.
Thank you.
I hope nobody will leave. Everybody will enjoy.